Yo ho ho, and a bottle of hi, hello, and thanks for listening to Flip the Mutts, a podcast about everyone. This is the episode 2 addendum. Dearest listener, have you ever noticed how minor events serve as the pretext and justification for removing liberties? For creating new laws that clamp down on your freedom and disproportionately empower the state? Have you ever thought about how random, isolated incidents are used to make massive steps forward in government control? Think about things like the Patriot Act. This had a legitimate purpose, but was used for things far beyond the scope of its justification. Think about the Port Arthur massacre. Some nutter goes on a killing spree, and that's justification for removing firearms rights for millions. But there's a couple of things to think about here. Firstly, yes, they do need to maintain their system, so they have an interest in keeping things relatively stable while marching toward the ultimate goal. And secondly, these people, the elite class, don't actually care about you, so you can throw away the idea that they do these things to keep you safe. And look, I'm using some pretty strong and exaggerated words throughout this podcast, because I want to emphasize certain things. And I'm about to use one of those words as a tool for emphasis again. So I'd love to dispel the myth that they care about you. All members of the non-elite class are slaves. The slave population is into the billions. So the idea that any of these people actually care about you, people they don't even know, by the way, is completely absurd. So when 10 or 20 or 200 or 2,000 people die, it doesn't actually matter to them. What matters is the opportunity to take away more of your rights and to empower themselves further. Start listening, friends. And look, I firmly believe that you can't even truly care about someone you don't even know anyway. People like to feign caring because they're programmed to. It's become expected. But I don't think you can ever truly care about someone you don't personally know. So all the people that pretend to care are really doing is simulating emotions. These are synthetic humans. Unless, of course, I'm capable of a depth of feeling that far exceeds everyone else's. But I'm not special, right? So that can't be true. Even though I surely do have an incredible depth of feeling. Anyway, this isn't to say I don't care about you or anyone else, dearest listener. I do care. I do want you to have a happy life and range of fulfilling experiences. I want that for most humans. But if you die on the other side of the planet and I never met you, that's not great and I feel for your friends and family, but to me, it doesn't actually matter. There's billions and billions of people on this planet. The loss of one and the real adverse effects on an amount of other people I don't know is inconsequential. Of course, this does tie in to causality, which I spoke about in episode 2. Your death affects the future of all people everywhere. But I'm not going to cry. That would be fake. And on that note, I had such a good time observing one of the world's narcissist leaders putting on an act some years ago after a shooting event. A shooting event that was used as justification for removing rights, by the way. But it was so comedic and fascinating to watch this particular leader. I could see the level of fakeness, the cunning manipulation, the feigned, simulated emotions. You can't hide from me, I'm afraid. The putrid narcissism was written all over her face. And you can see people processing in real time. I am an adept observer and very experienced with what they'd call human psychology. And that's because I've been alive my whole life, interacting with humans. And what I learned as a practicing shaman amplified my understandings. But anyway, my point is that you can actually see the thought patterns unfolding in a person's mind by observing them, especially watching their face as they're interacting and as they're speaking. So I had a good laugh reading this particular leader's narcissism and watching her synthetic emotions play out. And you have to love it, seeing the Cheshire Cat grin on a person's face when they think they're being so clever and no one in the world can see what game they're playing. I'm so clever, so cunning, I'm getting away with it, they're eating it up, they'll never know. It's pure comedy. And I'll acknowledge here that confirmation bias can play into these observations. You certainly can see what you want to see, but not at all when you offset that possibility with objectivity, with at least the fervent desire for objectivity and the will to pursue it. The fact is that when you observe people long enough and understand human thought patterns, well, you can see the mind working on a person's face. And most people do this, right? We all read facial cues and whatnot, but what I'm talking about goes a bit deeper than that. And even then, I know others can do this too. It's also easy when observing someone trying their best to win an Academy Award, such as the leader I mentioned. Let's get back on track. So look, what we have is a class of people ruling over the rest. This class uses rare and isolated events to make massive, disproportionate leaps forward in their quest for more and more power and control. And there's something else I feel as though I need to say here, because you really do need to think about it. Events that happen like the now classic random shooting incident are simply byproducts, expected results of living in huge societies. But these things are anomalies. They're also inevitable when you reduce the value of the individual to near zero. So you have people living in large numbers and an individual is worth nothing. An individual gets mad about stuff and takes it out on other people. Think about how many people there are and think about how many of those people do these things. The occasional one or two in billions. These people are just rogues. And it's the price you pay for living in such large numbers while also reducing the value of life. And it's negligible to the point of being inconsequential in the grand scheme of things. This is not rocket science. It's very, very basic. And you can take away everyone's tools all you like, but that's not the solution to any of it. If a person wants to hurt other people, they will find a way to do it. The real solution, obviously, is to treat people better and improve the quality of life for everyone. And even then, it will still happen, because we've yet to account for the mentally ill. And yes, there are solutions in that area too, but you hear none of them from me in this moment. And of course, you can't improve the quality of life for everyone when people are so, so greedy. The problem with things like shooting incidents, again, this is the low-hanging fruit for me, so that's why I'm using it as a tool to make my points. The problem is that the solutions people come up with, removing the ability for people to shoot people by taking away guns for everyone, is just so short-sighted and infuriating because it's an affront to logic. It's infuriating because people who think that this is the right solution are in positions to affect that solution. The truth is, though, that it's their best solution. Because capitalism is, with certainty, decreasing the average quality of life for everyone, everywhere. And they love and need capitalism. It's what feeds them money and power. So they have to keep capitalism around for themselves. And because they want capitalism to increase in intensity, there is no interest at all in solving people-related problems. They're only interested in making it so that people problems can't happen. Can't happen to them. So you see the difference here? Instead of making a world so that people don't get so disgruntled, they will instead make it so that the disgruntled people can't do anything. It's actually just so foolish because sooner or later, people may actually wake up. Of course, we're racing, right? The race is between the elite class and everyone else. The elite class is racing to remove everyone else's ability to overthrow them before they're awake enough to do it. They're racing the inevitable uprising. And, by the way, they're putting a lot of energy into slowing everyone else down by causing division, by keeping everyone divided. They're winning the race. So I've taken several swings at capitalism now, in this addendum and in episode 2 itself. I don't really want to, but as everything is connected, I have no choice. I do want to make an acknowledgement, though, and this is especially relevant to my speaking about capitalism. I'd like to acknowledge that it's extremely easy to identify problems, and much, much harder to come up with solutions. So, two things here. Firstly, I'm not trying to come up with any solutions, as that's a waste of my time and energy because I don't have my hands on the controls. If I was let loose in the control room, however, I have no doubt I'd be able to greatly improve things. With a little help from my friends, of course. And secondly, if enough people express discontent with this system, then the people in the control room might someday listen. Also, people who are concerned with coming up with solutions should become more motivated to put their minds to it. So it's not all for nothing. And again, I just want to stress that I'm not here trying to propose any solutions to capitalism. As for me, that's a total waste of energy, and I'm not so concerned with puny man-made systems. I've got bigger fish to fry. That said, though, in future episodes, I certainly will be taking more swings at this system, so if that's what you're into, stay tuned. Oh, and while I'm here acknowledging stuff, I acknowledge that free market capitalism has many virtues. It's just nowhere close to being equitable. Now, let's turn our minds back to the progressive and systematic removal of freedom and increasing state power. So, I was just talking a lot about shooting incidents, right? Am I going to get cancelled for saying the word gun, shooting? For speaking about the real world? Probably, yeah. Probably, yes. At least that's been the pattern of human behaviour in recent times. Anyway, so we know how the state removes freedoms and gives itself more power. This whole shooting incident thing is one of the ways that this happens, right? So now let's think about some things that would be very helpful for governments in the future. And I just want to bring one thing up because I'm trying to articulate and illustrate a single point here. So, I imagine it would be extremely useful for a government to be able to track all members of a population. Of course, the elites would be exempt, by the way, but tracking everyone would be great for them, as their objective is total control. So how are some ways they might be able to achieve this? And look, people are already volunteering to be tracked anyway. Everyone now walking around with pocket computers and whatnot. Some people even volunteer their children to get chips put into them and things like this. I've seen this before anyway. But let's force the issue. Let's make it so all people are tracked at all times. How could we justify this? How could we justify putting a chip into every human? Well, we're already on the way, right? We're already a step closer now that it's normal for the government to be able to mandate things like injections. We're not quite at that stage, and yes, I'm exaggerating to stress the point, which is that it's now closer to being normal for governments to inject people for future generations, especially the COVID kids. And yep, they're only 5 or 10 or 15 years away from being fully grown, so the very near future. But we want to justify forcing tracking chips to be implanted in everyone. So what do we need? Well, let's go with Old Faithful. Fear. Let's scare people into thinking they're less safe without global tracking. So what do we do first? Well, we need a bunch of people to die to stoke the fear, right? So let's create an event. By the way, I'm skipping to a false flag scenario here because I don't want to get stuck in the mud talking about things that will probably naturally happen anyway. and false flag operations are confirmed to have happened many, many, many times in the past. This is not me dreaming something up. This stuff actually happens, and it's happened a ton of times. So this is just a device to make a point. And now, I'll actually try to be brief. So, the government wants everyone to be tracked. They know fear is their most potent tool for manufacturing consent. So, let's have some mass killing event. Screw it, let's have several. The government doesn't care if they lose a few cattle, and that's an absolute bargain for the power they're about to gain in this scenario. So, several mass killing events take place in a nation, and it's all so bad and so tragic, the fear level gets ramped up, the media mind control engine goes into overdrive, spreading and exacerbating fear. And along comes the government, ever teary about these great tragedies. Sorry guys, it's all so horrible. Oh god, we lost some unique and amazing people. And we're all so sorry, and especially because we actually knew about the perpetrators. Knew about them months ago. We were looking for them this whole time, but we just couldn't find them. And so this horrible tragedy has occurred. Really, really so very sorry, but we tried our absolute best. We just couldn't find them in time to stop any of it. So you can see where I'm going with this, right? We could have saved all these people if we had only known where the evildoers were. And let's not forget, there are so many evildoers out there. Wait a minute, what's this? A small implant that is capable of tracking a person? Could we use that? It certainly would be good if you got lost hiking. And it certainly would be convenient. It would increase efficiency. You don't need physical ID anymore. You don't need a passport. And oh man, everyone would be so safe if we could just track everyone. So safe. So yeah, that's the way I'd engineer consent if this was my objective. And you can apply that same program to any government objective you can imagine. That's because it's how they operate. And let's not lose our minds here. I used a false flag scenario to illustrate my point. I'm not saying they will do this, but then again, they probably will. Because they're motivated to decrease freedom and increase their power and control. This, of course, also ties in with things I said in episode 2 about colonizing space. That's much further in the future, though, just noting that it will make things a lot easier to justify. And by the way, there are already nations on Earth that are Orwellian dystopias. China and North Korea are getting there. We even have some of those features in the so-called Free West. We have thought crime, for instance. We have so-called hate speech laws popping up all over the West. One of the thinly veiled laws I previously alluded to. They don't care about you, though. This is just a tool you've allowed them to have in order to give them greater ability to attack people, to punish thought crime. And remember how I ended episode 2? Everything is all very well and good until you're on the wrong end of things. And it's only a matter of time before someone who doesn't align with your interests has access to the toolbox. Talk about short-sighted. What a gamble that is. It's absolutely bewildering, to be quite honest. And again, I'm ashamed. But enough with my dim view of humanity. Okay, so I've been going pretty deep into some negative things so far during this podcast. But I'm not one of those people who just saturates themselves in good things. I'm not one to close my eyes and float away on the wings of delusion. The push into negative expression is a part of problem solving. The first part is you have to identify a problem. It's part of my will to fix things. And I'm not trying to fix the world or anything, just trying to express myself, trying to get others to think about these things. And it feels so wasteful to be able to do something about something that you see as being bad and not attempt to do it. So what's bad? People going brain dead. And people ignoring the truth about the world around them is especially bad. But hey, I've got no dog in the fight, so for me it's ultimately just whatever. Do what you like. Now back to reality. Dearest listener, it's occurred to me that I have more to say about the issue of technology and tracking, etc. So, many years ago now, I bought the iPhone 4. And I've been using computers since I was very young, by the way. So, there was great appeal in being able to carry one around in my pocket. So, I bought this iPhone 4 and I was going through the menu, setting it up, and I came to some part of the menu that I believe had something to do with location tracking, like GPS or something. And it was weird because there were these settings at the top of this menu page, like two or three settings, turn on or off GPS or whatever it was. And then there was this weird text, which occupied the rest of the screen. It was like explanations for icons or something like that. But it was superfluous. Very odd, I thought. So I was like, wait a minute. And though there was nothing to indicate I could scroll down on this page, I thought I'd try anyway. I could smell a rat. And what do you know? Hidden below this nonsense filler text were further settings, and very obviously intentionally hidden from the user. And these were settings for like tracking data reporting to Apple or something like that, as I recall. And these were definitely settings that were intentionally hidden. The average user would never find them. Very cunning and very intentional on Apple's part. So the reason I brought this up is to draw your attention to how all these entities go right up to the line in order to extract data from you. And sometimes they cross it. But of course, if the money they make is more than the money they have to pay out in fines or settling lawsuits, they keep doing it. Or if the data they get is worth the money they're paying for those things, they keep doing it. The main reason capitalist entities want to extract as much data from you as they can is so they can better extract energy from you, and even trade your data for energy. They're also using this data to develop better tools for controlling what you think, controlling what you want. And I hope you recognize the value all this data has to the governments of the world. These technologies and tracking are of great interest to the governments because they share the same objectives as big tech. They want to be able to control what you think. That is the ultimate goal here. To become the entity that controls the thoughts and therefore actions of all other entities. And by the way, have you ever noticed how you don't even control your pocket computer? Google and Apple decide many of your pocket computer's settings for you, and you have no ability to change that. And these are not dumb people. This is not an oversight. It's intentional, because they want you to have these devices, and they want to retain control over them, so they can get what they want most of all, power and control. Some of these force settings, by the way, come in under the guise of keeping you safe. Things like the emergency warning system that's impossible for me to disable on my pocket computer, though I probably could if I rooted the thing, became the super user. What I'm saying is that I don't want nor need any emergency warning system. That's my choice. Except it's not. That choice has been taken away from me by government and big tech. Something has been decided for me. My only choice left is whether or not to actually have a pocket computer, accepting, of course, the option of completely unlocking the thing and ripping the guts out of it. And this is kind of a bad example, as this dumb system is trivial. But see for yourself, go into your pocket computer and have a poke around. I guarantee you there's plenty of things in there you should be able to turn on or turn off, and you aren't able to. Plenty of things you should have options for, but don't. And remember, these aren't dumb people producing these things. This is no oversight. My point with this is that governments and corporations want control over your devices. They definitely want you to have them, and they definitely want to extract data from them. And by the way, I barely use my pocket computer. I mostly use it for listening to music in some situations, as a convenience tool for using the internet, and occasionally I use its phone function. But beyond that, I'm not tethered to it like so many are, and I could easily live without it, and have done. There's a lot to be said for disconnecting too, which is one of the things I said at the end of episode 2, and I'm not the first one to say it. The issues caused by devices like pocket computers have been around since the advent of pocket computers. I've personally gone years at a time without using these things, by the way. And it took me many, many, many years to buy another one after I sold my iPhone 4, only a couple of months after buying it. These things do have many virtues, but the harm they cause is also significant. And now that the internet is ultra-curated, it's easy for me to not care about pocket computers. And as a shaman, it's even more essential for me to disconnect from all the garbage. And with doing this, I gain a better understanding of how these things can affect me, how these things can affect you, how these things can affect the children. You'll also find that a person who is unplugged is far more authentic. And that's largely because their thoughts and feelings are their own. They are closer to being organic than the synthetic automatons who can't exist without a pocket computer, can't exist without being constantly connected, without being constantly shaped. And you're only connected to man and man's agendas. You're disconnected from God. So have fun with that, bots. Some of us actually enjoy being truly human. I find walking through the city I live in to be quite surreal now, actually. It's perfect. This mass of people all walking, staring into their phones, oblivious to the world around them. The perfect allegory, a perfect reflection of what the Western world is. A great mass of people distracted by garbage while a prison is being built around them. It's genius. They'll never even notice. Until it's too late. One of the themes in these first two episodes has been reality and perception. More specifically, the fact you don't know anything and have no idea what reality even is. And I was thinking about the whole it could all be a simulation thing the other day. I was thinking about how there was something I didn't even mention. And that is that you don't even know what you are. So while here on Earth, here in the simulation, you might think that you are this monkey, this great ape. But you could be something entirely different. And, that said, while journeying through other planes of existence, I came to learn that I am more than just this physical thing. And, as I'm not special, that means it's also very likely true of you too. So I know for sure that I actually am something different. And more than just an ape. And this feeds into what I'm saying, because some experiences I've had, I could say that I was phasing between worlds. And the world I've seen on the other side is quite wonderful. But what if this was just me temporarily waking from my slumber, waking from the dream of being an ape? I could make a case for that. It's not exactly what I think, but I could make a case for it, as it's certainly possible, just not the most probable in my estimation. But think about it, you could actually be something completely different entirely. You could have absolutely no relation at all to anything that you know to exist. And from here we can play with thought a little further. We could even bring it closer to reality by saying things like, well, what if you were on a giant spacecraft right now? What if you were in stasis? You could be part of a mass of actual people travelling between galaxies, let's say. And since the distance is beyond comprehension, you're sleeping for an incomprehensibly long time until we get there. Of course, the ship and its functions are maintained by the robots while we're all sleeping on our journey. The robots are even breeding more of us as we go. So that could be happening, and yeah, there's about a billion reasons why you might be plugged into a simulation. There's also about a billion reasons why I alone might be, and I'm the only one actually here. But anyway, that's just some food for thought, and if anything I've ever said has given you any thoughts at all, I'm happy. So talking about space and extraterrestrials and stuff, it may not surprise you to learn that I've seen things 3 times in my life, actually. But it's weird though, because one of the things I saw I remember distinctly. I remember exactly where I was, what I was doing, what time it was, how I felt, and what I saw. I remember everything about that. The next one, I don't actually remember what I saw at all. I remember where I was, who I was, and I remember my surroundings with exceptional detail. I remember the feeling, but I can't quite remember what I actually experienced. And the third one is the one that really blows my mind. It blows my mind because of the questions it raises. This third memory is not even a memory at all. I don't remember anything except I remember something happened. And thinking about the spot in my mind, this place where a memory should be, I feel all the hair on my body stand up. There's something quite extraordinary there, something quite surreal and otherworldly. I saw something. Something happened. But I don't remember. And that's not to say that I think aliens have visited Earth. I don't know that they have, or if they even exist at all. But I've seen some stuff, so I wonder. Maybe. It's funny too, because I've previously mentioned that fiction often contains very real things that are exaggerated for dramatic purposes, I suppose. Real things that are exaggerated to become completely fantastical. And I supposed that reality could be informing these fictions. It wouldn't surprise me. So I grew up watching The X-Files, right? A show that often concerned itself with extraterrestrials. Gillian Anderson was the first woman I ever had a crush on, by the way. Hi, Gillian, if you're listening. And what a great character Scully was. An intelligent and attractive woman, and very healthily skeptical. If only she was real. Anyway, The X-Files is one of these fictions that exaggerates very real things. And when I think of the phrase, truth is stranger than fiction, I think about this. Because fact really has been stranger than fiction in my life. And by the way, I've gone over it intensely. The whole chicken and the egg scenario, that is. Did I develop certain abilities because fiction informed them? Or did I couple fiction with my expanding consciousness to create these capabilities? Or am I completely delusional? Well, I can at least say the last is false, not only because I work hard to validate everything, but also because the results of being able to do certain things are very real, and there are other people who know this too. Other people have been privy to and beneficiaries of some of the things I've done. Also, the constant validation procedures are, in part, to keep from ever becoming delusional. And look, I know it's conspicuous that I'm being very vague and not saying too much here. But again, it's something I may put forth in a book someday, and there are some other very good reasons for keeping things quiet. So all in all, reality has been very strange for me, very unusual. And I'm actually happy, even elated with that, because it tells me that things, for sure, aren't as they seem. Which opens my mind to the world of possibilities. It's fun and surreal and intensely euphoric to think, to expand the mind, to stoke the flames of wonderment. And in this, I find joy. So now that I may sound crazy to you, dearest listener, that's good. Your loss. It's occurred to me, though, that I used a poor turn of phrase in episode 2 when I said, I can hear your voice in my head. Truly terrible because, no, I don't hear voices. Just a turn of phrase that was a poor choice. Because I'm talking about things that surely sound strange and crazy to probably most people. So let me be clear. The only voice I've ever heard in my head is my own. And on a related note, after having spent some time sounding callous talking about shooting incidents and indigenes and whatnot, it may surprise you to learn, dearest listener, that I'm actually an empath. But I actively limit because there is a price to be paid for empathy. And I have an incredible depth of feeling, even if I do say so myself. I know for sure that I have an abnormal depth of feeling, so I have to protect myself. I know sometimes it may sound like I'm cold and heartless when I'm actually anything but. I just don't waste myself and have the ability to control what I think and feel. And since mind, body, and soul are all connected, it's useful to be able to temporarily shut down processes that can harm you. And this is especially important to be able to do as a shaman because you are so vulnerable so often. Sometimes I open the gates completely. I just have the ability to close them too. And by the way, it's completely possible to take total possession of yourself, to possess your mind entirely. And consequently, the notion that you have a subconscious that you have no control over is complete hogwash. Unless, of course, I'm special. And I say this because you hear these silly little arguments when someone evokes the great subconscious bias and things like that, which is a total cop-out. It boils my blood when some idiot makes some false assertion. Because if I'm hearing it, that nonsense person is in a position to be able to broadcast these nonsense thoughts, causing harm. Actual harm, not this false or perceived harm, artificially generated harm used to leverage something out of others. Pathetic. In my everyday life, I prefer to let logic reign most of the time. That's my default state. It's far less energy intensive when going about my day-to-day life. And by shutting off emotions when they aren't exactly useful to me, I'm able to continue my climb unencumbered. So you see, it's not that I hate everyone or anything like that. I just keep from things like interacting with others when it's not useful to my mission. I keep from feeling things when it might subtract from that mission. And again, it's completely possible to take total possession of yourself. So I always find the ridiculous emotional responses people have to things like logic, truth and reason, to be so frustrating. It's frustrating because I'm stuck here with people that don't spend any time whatsoever evolving to the point where they have an ounce of control over their own being. This lack of personal evolution is reckless. It makes you a loose cannon. It makes you dangerous. There is a severe lack of personal development around here. So, parents are failing, the education system is obviously deficient, and everyone is paying the price. To you listening in the future, which is all of you, of course, I want you to understand some things about what I say. First of all, most of what I say I would stand by until the end of time. But some of what I say are just thoughts in progress, thoughts evolving. So I loathe the thought of anyone trying to lock me into something I've expressed because they've failed to recognize that thoughts evolve. Thoughts and feelings can change over time. They do. So some of what I've said isn't how I'm always going to think. And I don't want to be locked in, because I evolve. It's even absurd to ever try and lock someone into freezing the evolution of their thoughts. So don't try it on me, thanks. I could do without the aggravation. And I am uneducated in the traditional sense, by the way. You'll probably even be completely appalled if you knew the details of my schooling. So I haven't enjoyed access to the same building blocks that others have. Hasn't slowed me down or affected my cognition, though. The point is that my thoughts and feelings on certain subjects are guaranteed to evolve as I acquire more and more building blocks, as I learn. And if I ever stop learning, I'll be dead. So there would be no podcast. One of the subjects I've touched is one of these evolving thought cases, by the way. That is, what I've said about the indigenes. Something I don't put much thought into anyway. I did a pretty poor job on that part in episode 2, though. And I certainly wasn't trying to solve any issues. I was actually trying to make a point about European colonialism and causality, so I ended up neglecting so much on the subject of indigenes. I think I still succeeded in making my point, but at the expense of not doing anyone any justice. So yeah, I wish now that I approached that slightly differently. But hey, you know what they say, retrospection is 40-20 or whatever. And on a related note, because the way people actually think about indigenes is not the same as the way they pretend to think about them, because of how they just parrot what they think other people want to hear, because they've been trained with what to say because they have to go along to get along. They have to wear the mask that hides their true thoughts and feelings, especially on the indigenes issue around here. You have to, of course, make a person feel safe and comfortable before they will tell you anything that may be able to hurt them. The indigene issue is such a great example in this country. And it's a fascinating study for me because I learn more and more about how people are programmed. And I learn more and more about the effects of people's real thought suppression. And I've spoken about these things over the first two episodes a fair bit. So it's interesting to me to think about what would happen if things were suddenly flipped. If everyone took off their masks. If it suddenly became disagreeable for a person to hide what they truly think and feel. It would be messy, but we have a better chance of making some real progress this way, in my view. Blanket immunity for everyone to say what they really think. No attacks, no ostracization. The end of resorting to personal attacks when an argument exceeds your cognition. We could definitely solve some stuff this way. Make real progress to a world that isn't so balked. Well, that's it for me and this addendum, dearest listener. Thanks for listening. And for more stuff or whatever, visit riptheguts.com.